And welcome back to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, we have the Executive Director of the Parkinson's Council, Wendy Lewis. And we have with us Board Member Scott Larson, who is living with Parkinson's today. And welcome. Thank you both for being on today.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Let's start off with, Wendy, if you want to get us started here, how about you give us a quick mission statement about the council itself, but then let's get into what is and what isn't Parkinson's.
Great. Thank you, Laura. Thanks for inviting me. Parkinson's Council has been around since 1987. Our mission is to raise funds in our region and reinvest those funds back into our region in comprehensive care, research, movement programs, anything that has to do with quality of life, we are going to invest in those programs.
And one of the things we're going to talk about today is living with Parkinson's, because this disease, how prevalent is it? How many people are diagnosed, or how many people are living with it at any given time?
So there's approximately about 60,000 people are diagnosed with Parkinson's each year. We think that that's an undercount. There are some folks who are underdiagnosed and some people that are never diagnosed. There are about 1.5 million people living with Parkinson's in the United States. And I think overall, maybe 6 million around the world.
When you say undiagnosed, let's talk about what is Parkinson's? Because that implies that if you don't know what it is, that it masquerades as other things, or it's diagnosed as other diseases?
Well, Parkinson actually happens when the brain stops making dopamine, which is kind of that feel-good chemical that actually also helps to coordinate movement. And once it stops, you could start to see things related to tremors, balance, walking problems, things like that. So anything like that, because dopamine is a chemical that coordinates balance. When it stops working, these things stop working. Also, there's the motor symptoms associated with Parkinson's, where you see the stiffness, again, the slowness, tremors. And then there's also non-motor symptoms associated with Parkinson's that are anything that, like, from depression to memory problems to constipation, just those things, which can mimic other things, right? It can mimic aging when, overall, you know, when you age, there's some aspects of these things you will have: memory, depression, maybe even constipation. So that's where sometimes where it gets a little bit more complicated to diagnose.
I was going to say, you just described maybe half of the middle-aged people that are tuning in or hearing this by podcast. We are all now thinking, oh my gosh. So let's talk about the history of the disease then. That just sounds like getting old. When did it become, or when did somebody actually recognize that this is an actual diagnosable syndrome or disease?
Well, I think that it's named after James Parkinson's. And one of the things that I think he noticed more or less, it was the tremors that were more prevalent to be able to make that diagnosis. The reason why he was able to call it Parkinson's is that he saw some commonalities in it after naming it after himself. He's some commonalities for, and then just balance, walking tremors, things like that. So it was actually diagnosed, it was named after him in the 1800s. And Scott can really talk a little bit more about that, because I'm sure he's done tons and tons of research about Parkinson's as well, having someone who actually has Parkinson's.
Yeah, Scott, fill us in. What did you find out, or why did you set out to learn about it?
Well, I found that it's much more detailed, and I'll use a spiderweb analogy. There's so many variations to the disease, nobody's the same. You know, when I first learned about what I had, it was very confusing. Because you have what's known as tremors is a prevalent sign that most people think of by seeing Michael J. Fox and his movements. And they look at me and they say, well, you don't look like him, so how do you have it? Not understanding that there's issues with slowness, which I don't see, but everybody else can see in me and how I move, and the tremors naturally, and the rigidity. So there's various things that I do. I'm a nut when it comes to exercise, because exercise is one of the best things, best medications for Parkinson's. You know, my first movement disorder specialist doctor, before he retired, said, the best advice I can give you is don't stop moving. But I never understood what that meant. It took about 6 months to figure it out. And now I'm a preacher of exercise. And I'm sort of, I go overboard a little bit too at times. Because I counsel individuals and say, if you find something you like to do or love to do and just do it, it doesn't matter what it is, just move.
You said something there. You said that you didn't see it, but other people saw it, a slowness. And what are the actual symptoms of Parkinson's? And is that how it gets diagnosed?
Well, there's no blood test you can take. It's all physical watching of the person's body and how it reacts to things. So the way I look at it is there's three primary functions of Parkinson's. Tremors, rigidity, and slowness. And you need to have two of those three to be deemed Parkinson's, have Parkinson's. I got lucky. I got all three of them.
What you want, the trifecta there. Is this common? But Wendy, is this what happens? Somebody goes to a doctor with these three issues, or a family member says, you have to talk, you have to find out what's going on here?
Well, it manifests itself differently in some folks. There are things like related to tremors that some people may have, others don't. It may be just that some people, when they're walking, a family member notices that their arm doesn't swing. So there's things like that, those little nuances that you're just not aware of. Speech is another thing that may be is a symptomatic of having Parkinson's. So because there are muscles in your throat and your once you have a movement disorder, your voice gets a little bit lower, a little bit softer. Things like that, which you would never think of specifically related to Parkinson's, are some things that may end up being manifest itself as Parkinson's. So there's not one thing you could say that is Parkinson's. There might be some issues related to, it mimics aging in some ways. So if you're having a little bit of issue with balance and walking, it could be that, you know, your grandma's walking a little slow. What's going on there? So sometimes it's just, it may be just aging, and sometimes it's something else, and it's something neurological. And that's why it's important for folks to reach out to a neurologist who hopefully there is the neurologist who may not be specialized in Parkinson's who will refer them to a specialist in Parkinson's, which are called movement disorder specialists. So to make it short for you, all movement disorder specialists are neurologists, but not all neurologists are movement disorder specialists.
I'm going to guess that this gets, and I think we've already mentioned this, so if I'm repeating myself, my apologies, so it sounds like that this can be, if you went to one particular physician, they might say, your problems are based on, well, it might be heart, or it might be this, or it might be something else. Is there a long gap between symptoms starting and someone getting a diagnosis?
For myself, it was about a 3-year period when some physical notions were recognized, not by me, but by others. By the time I saw my general doctor, he sent me to a neurologist, just a general neurologist for the sake of things. And it took another 6 months till I got into Penn to see a movement specialist. There's a long window of time. Originally, I thought my shaking, as people called it, was caused by my medications I was on for blood pressure. And so I did my own self-diagnosis saying, it's a side effect. But it moved up from there, it moved on, and I finally started talking to people and talking to doctors about it, and then surprised on January 3rd of 2013.
You alluded to probably the most famous person of all, who's probably the face of Parkinson's today, the actor Michael J. Fox, who is obviously and was very, very young. This is a disease that mimics aging, yet the face of Parkinson's today is a very young man. What is the age range for diagnosis, and does it strike any one group in particular? Does your race, your ethnicity, does your gender play into developing this?
Well, most of the photos you will see of somebody who's have Parkinson's is somebody in their 60s who's white and who's male. Parkinson's is actually seeing, it is definitely a baby boomer generation is affected. But you also see some young professionals that are diagnosed as well. Those in their 40s and early 50s who were diagnosed with Parkinson's while they're still working. And then there are some who are diagnosed in their 30s as well, in late 20s, but that percentage is pretty small. So the percentage, the highest percentage are those who are like in their 50s and 60s. These are more male prevalence, and it's more Caucasian versus people of color. But that could be just too that there have been some, you know, barriers to care or barriers to access to be able to be diagnosed. So as I said to you earlier, that there are some folks who are underdiagnosed and undiagnosed in some certain communities. So Parkinson's has been seen as being more prevalent around white 60-year-old males.
But that's a group that's going to be employed and having health care and going in and being able to pursue symptoms that someone else would just dismiss as aging or, again, something based on another disease or another issue.
Denial as well.
Oh, good grief. If you're just joining us, this is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, we have Wendy Lewis. She is the executive director of the Parkinson Council, and we have its board member and someone who's living with Parkinson's, Scott Larson. If you'd like more information about what we're talking about and about a great fundraiser that is coming up, their signature event, Stamp Out Parkinson's, coming up October 17th, go to theparkinsoncouncil.org. That's theparkinsoncouncil.org. If you're hearing this and you're not in this particular tri-state region, you can always, of course, just Google Parkinson and you will find the Parkinson's Foundation or the Michael J. Fox Foundation, wherever you may be. But in this area, theparkinsoncouncil.org. Let's talk about living with Parkinson's, because a man who is 60 years old, a woman who is 60, a guy like the actor who's diagnosed in his early 30s, there's a lot of living between diagnosis and really aging out there. What can be done for somebody who is diagnosed? I'm going to guess, obviously, that that's what you're working on.
Where do you start is the question. It's a matter of what is the side effects of the medications you're on. To just be able to roll over in bed is a challenge. And every day you wake up, it could be a different story to how that day is going to run for you because of rigidity and stiffness and just your tremors taking place, what's happening to your body that day, the weather, the variations in everything that can happen to you during the course of the day. It's just one challenge after another. Some have more challenges. And the way I look at things is I don't complain about anything because, you know, I can't fix what I've got, but I can sure try to work on what I've got. I just live that every day.
Wendy, what are some of the programs that you offer? And obviously, if Scott is living with this, so are his family members.
That is correct. Parkinson's is a family disease. We know that. And then I want the audience to know as well that Parkinson's is not a fatal disease. It is a chronic disease that can be managed with medication. And as Scott talked about, exercise has been a part of his medication plan, his treatment plan. And his neurologist, the movement disorder specialist, will tell people who have Parkinson's to just keep moving. So one of the things that we do offer as an organization is that we've been able to be really invested in some of the movement programs that have been really innovative. The Dance for PD program that was created from a Brooklyn group, David Leventhal is the Dance for PD co-founding dancer, and he has been amazing and very generous of his time here in the Philadelphia region. It is a program designed specifically for people with Parkinson's and their care partners, no matter what level of progression of the disease that they have. We also have a program that we support called Rocksteady Boxing Program, which is a non-contact group boxing program that was started in Indianapolis. And they actually have trainers that go to Indianapolis and get trained and bring it back to the region. So we were the first organization in the region to invest in that program years ago. So we find the things that we like to do to be very innovative, to be pretty safe and fun. So those are the kind of movement programs that we invest in. Also, yoga has been something that we've also invested in for many years. A yoga program here in the Philadelphia area, somebody who is a yoga therapist named Teresa Conroy, she's amazing. And so we were really fortunate to be able to have her as a partner in this program as well.
When you talk about a disease that is chronic, it's people are trying to continue working, and they are still working and having an active family life, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to talk about the economic ramifications of Parkinson's to the family and to us. Is there a monetary amount you can tack onto this?
Well, they've been trying to measure that for years and years. And I think they came up, the last statistics I saw cost about $25 billion a year in terms of the cost of managing the treatment, including, I think, care partner resources as well. $25 billion a year in this country to help support people living with Parkinson's and their family. So I think that one of the things that has been really great, we've been really happy about, is being in a region where there's tons of research that's being done. There's research being done at Jefferson and Penn that have been very cutting edge, very innovative, and then have gotten support from all over the country. So we invest in those kinds of scientific and also clinical research to be able to identify and ask people to be a part of clinical trials. So we don't have a number specific other than the last time it was measured. I think they looked at it and there was a number thrown out of $25 billion of the cost of managing and dealing with Parkinson's.
So you're dealing with research hospitals around the area, and you once said, and you mentioned that a neurologist is not necessarily a movement specialist, and a specialist isn't, et cetera. Do you work with the peers? Do you work with area physicians and work with them on recognizing the signs and guiding them towards the therapies, et cetera?
Well, what's really great about us being investing in these institutions is that they've been very generous of their time in helping to educate the community about Parkinson's. So we actually feel that they know how to, you know, talk to the community about Parkinson's, what it is and what it isn't. And so Jefferson and Penn and Cooper and the University of Delaware, those are the institutions that we've dealt with that have movement disorder specialists that are really working towards creating programs that improve quality of life, and also to help to encourage some of the patients to be a part of clinical trials as well, so that we know a little bit more about what treatment options may be out there and may be available for people. There are new medications that come out all the time. And so the only way that that can happen is that they have folks enrolled in clinical trials around some medications as well. So I think for us and in the region, we've just been very fortunate to be in the Philadelphia area with a wealth of resources and a knowledge and talent here that are working really, really hard with both the patient and families. I mean, also offering things for the care partners, like, you know, support groups and, you know, therapy and those kinds of activities that are really important to keep the care partner engaged and healthy as well, so that they can make that journey with their spouse or loved one.
If I asked this earlier, I've forgotten already, but is this a genetic disease?
So, you know, people, there's a lot of research being done around that. And Scott, you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I mean.
Yeah, I feel it's genetic. Here's my reasons why. My mother is one of 10. Her brother had it. Her mother had it, but yet there's no scientific evidence that it is genetic at this point in time. So there's so little known about it. We know so much, but yet know so little. And I feel it is genetic from my standpoint. My mom also then takes blame. She's now 93 years old. She blames herself for myself getting Parkinson's. So it's upsetting to her, you know, but like, it is what it is. I deal with it on a daily basis and we move forward, period.
Is that one of the questions that a physician may ask when you first see them? Did anyone else in your family have this, these same symptoms?
No, that wasn't it. For my general physician now, a few times I've brought it up to different doctors and so forth, and there's really no major study that I know going on right now for the genetic end of things. It's just a matter of how do we keep things moving. Now, besides the medical, the pharmaceutical industry, there's also many tests or many different studies being done at the local area colleges on arm swing and balance and movement to how can they help you, for example, with arm swing. I was part of a trial that wore two little Fitbit type devices on my wrist, so they would give me positive feedback when I swung my arms correctly. When I did not swing my arms correctly when I walked, it wouldn't give me any information. So my objective was to swing my arm far enough that I'd get a response. It helps you to relearn how to swing your arms when you walk. It sounds funny, but you do it automatically. I have to think about doing it.
Wendy?
When the researchers actually were looking at Parkinson's, they look at it from the perspective of three really real things. So one is the environment. People who are living in areas with, you know, there's a large use of pesticides might be maybe include a higher exposure to pesticides may have, being a component to having being diagnosed with Parkinson's. But there are also other things that Scott had mentioned, which is the genetic factor. There is some research that had been done by the Michael J. Fox Foundation on a small sect of Ashkenazi Jews in Eastern Europe, and they were looking and testing to see what genetic factors exist within that small sect regarding Parkinson's. So there is some research being done on the genetic, and there's a lot of combination of factors as well. So there's genetics, there's environmental, there's also aging. So you are, you know, the population we know is baby boomer, as we grow and get older, that the Parkinson's is gonna actually explode. It's gonna double by a certain, you know, in the next 20 years. So we know that there's just a combination of situations. We have no one thing.
So it behooves us to be aware and to ask questions and notice when something is different or ask when our family member asks about, well, how you're moving or anything that is untoward. And awareness then obviously is part of the big campaign, Stamp Out Parkinson's. And that is your big signature fundraising event because you have to pay for that research and for all of those boxing and dancing programs and for the therapy and the peer groups for the family members. And so do you want to talk about what is Stamp Out Parkinson's and how will it happen this year?
So this year, our mantra for Stamp Out Parkinson's is together we can do virtually anything, which is a great little mantra. This is our 19th walk. The last 3 years we've had it at the zoo. Last year we had 2,000 people and raised $425,000 that we can put right back into our region. This year is a little bit different. We actually are managing our expectations, knowing we're in the middle of a pandemic. We want to keep our folks safe. So we're doing this as a virtual event with the caveat that we actually are getting together the morning of October 17th for some education and some cheerleading and things that we would typically do in person that we're now going to do virtually. So we're very proud of what this walk has been able to offer this community. It's amazing to see even this year, again, we don't know what to expect because we're all on virtual. And I think maybe, you know, people are getting used to seeing each other's faces over a screen. But I have to say that when we were in person the last few years, since I've been a part of the council, seeing that community feeling, seeing that families come together, seeing people who are walking with other people who understand what they're going through, that they're not alone, that is just the most heartwarming and touching thing you could ever see, is to see people who each year to see the same folks over and over again, who may have progressed a little bit, but they're still there. Their family size may have even doubled at that point, but they feel like they're not alone. Parkinson's is a very isolating disease. And when you can come out and to see a community together, even if it's virtual, and know that as someone is there for you to support you in the programs and services that you love, that are people are investing in those things, the funds raised in this event stay in this community. So we feel that it's the community's funds. So the community is telling us this is what they want. They want to continue to talk to their social worker. They want to continue to have movement programs. They want to see the nurses and the movement disorder specialists and the researchers do the things that they would typically do in a regular year. So they still want those programs. And in order to get those programs, this is how we fund these programs, is through this walk.
And so how do we do this walk? We still form a team? How do we do it?
Still form a team. You register, you can donate, you form a team. We have actually had some very encouraging new teams who are, even though they had never been with us before, they're signing up and they're bringing, having their folks, friends and families, their peers sign up and be a part of their efforts. So yes, we actually encourage teams because that's a way you can cheerlead each other and you can feel that sense of support within your own family and your own small, your own community to be a part of a larger community.
When you register, do you get the little page where you can track your funds and get people to donate to you that way?
Absolutely. You can actually, you can personalize your page with a picture that's could be fun and silly and symbolic of what you describe yourself as. You can tell your story. Storytelling is very important to get people to actually understand what you're going through. So we actually ask people when you register, create a page, create a team, create a story, put a story up there, share on social media. There are a lot of opportunities to do that as well, and share with friends and family. So we think that it's very important to tell stories at this time, this particular time.
And do we just march in place on the 17th?
You can go and march with your friends anywhere, everywhere, anywhere you are. So basically, you can go to the park, you can go, you know, your backyard, your street, you know, social distance, of course, for people that you don't know, you may not be a part of your family unit. But we also have some amazing, if you sign up, you get some really beautiful, a beautiful mask. You get a t-shirt at a certain level. If you sign up at the $50 level, you get a mask and a t-shirt, and anything after that, you can sign up and get more masks and t-shirts. So we have, this is a unique year. I think our t-shirts are going to be a collector's item because it's together we can do virtually anything on it.
And so it will be virtual on October 17th. And obviously time is running out to form a team, but get in there. You can register up until that day and you're going to continue accepting the funds after the fact, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We will. We absolutely will.
And of course, the reason why we should be out there walking, let's wrap this sucker up now. Bring us home, Wendy.
Well, the Walk to Stamp Out Parkinson's, again, is a sense that we bring a sense of community. There's funds that are raised or put right back into this community for those programs and services that people love and care about. And overall, it's just a way for us to feel like we can do something to support our loved one and our family member and our colleague. There's something we can always do to support them. And so this is the one way you can show that support for both that individual and the Parkinson's community.
Scott, do you help with someone who's newly diagnosed?
I do. I will do that, no problem. Because I put myself out there. If someone wants to talk to me, just for counseling, just to talk, newly diagnosed, I'm there. I'm there to help.
Scott, parting words?
Just keep living, keep moving, and in the long run, things will work out just fine.
The day to keep moving, especially October 17th. It's a virtual stamp out this year. Together, we can do virtually anything. The big fundraiser for the Parkinson's Council. The money will stay, of course, in this region for research and for the programming for the families and for the people who have been diagnosed. And look at their website for more information. theparkinsoncouncil.org. If you are living not in this area, of course, you can always just Google search Parkinson's. You will find an organization close to you. And my guest today, it's Executive Director Wendy Lewis. Great last name, by the way. Wendy Lewis, the Executive Director of the Parkinson Council. And Scott Larson, living with Parkinson's and a board member of the Parkinson Council. Wendy, Scott, thanks for being on today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you both. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.